Welcome back to another episode of the Nashville Tech Feed. This episode, number 15, we're talking more iPad because we got the gang here. We're talking iPhone HD prototype. Music sales are down. And that's about it. Maybe some more. So let's get into it. To the Batmobile. Welcome back again. This is episode 15 of Nashville Tech Feed, and I just said that, but with all the ash in the air, I can't fly. I'm really tired. It's just really affecting my allergies. We are back again with the original gang. We have on the line, on the Skype, Lucas Hendrickson.
Hello.
Hello.
Greetings from the pollen laden Music City. It could be worse.
Yellow.
You could have the pollen, or you could have volcanic ash. You know, really, it's pretty much the same content these days.
Absolutely. And tapping in the background is Paul Shatskin.
Hello, everybody.
Welcome back, Paul.
I'm trying.
Glad
to
have you tonight.
So quietly, it's not working.
Aren't you tapping on your iPad?
Not presently, no.
Well. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
And finally, the one, the only, and I do that all the time, Jeff Smith.
Am I the only? I feel like. Hello, everybody.
I heard your last girlfriend said, I'm glad you're the only.
Ooh.
Wow.
Wow.
We just need to introduce Jeff as internet superstar.
So I know.
Jeff Smith.
Internet right, curly Jeff. Head. I think, hold on, that's the best appropriate description of me.
Wow. See if I had a sound effect like the screeching record where we could rewind it. I could start it over again, but I just have like
boring.
So that's we'll just have to keep going. Lucas,
yes, sir.
Do you have your iPad?
The iPad.
Do you have it?
I do not. I
you
have
do not.
Not? I will eventually be an early adopter. I'm just not an early adopter. But yes, we're. Three weeks now into the iPad revolution?
We are into the third week, yes.
The third week. And those of you who do have it, Jeff, I know Dave and Paul both have one. Have you acquired?
I thought Jeff traded his for a Newton.
I did. Actually, live in line, the Newton just looked a little bit more exciting. No, actually, I did get some for a couple of friends, and I took them up to New York secretly, but I have not gotten one personally, but I played with it quite a bit.
Right. And your observations, expectations met or not?
Well, it was a great expectation only because I was there in the line. I normally don't do that kind of stuff. And then I got to put them in my carry-on bag and fly to New York to deliver them to some people who lived in Europe who still are not able to buy them. So it was kind of this cool, stealthy kind of thing. And then we realized that once we brought it in there that, you know, you have to activate it. So we had to get all the way back to the Apple store, and the place was packed, of course, in Manhattan at the, you know, Fifth Avenue store. And then we sat down to play with it, and it was, you know, very cool. And I'm just thinking that the fact that we had to find Wi-Fi made me feel better about me waiting for the 3G or waiting to see if I just want to wait for version 2 to come out.
Did you feel at all like Jerry Reed driving Coors Light back across the Mississippi River, bootlegging iPads across the ocean?
I kind of felt more like Jason Bourne, except I could high kick. No, but again, it was that one of those things where we got it and we're opening up the box. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. We were at a little cafe somewhere in New York, and I say, here's your iPad. And he's like, great. We open it up and like, oh, now what are we gonna do? Because I bought it and I didn't connect it, so we had to go. And of course, he didn't have a computer with him, so we had to go and do the whole thing and then find a spot in the Apple store, which had, you know, everyone was sucking the Wi-Fi. And I'm seeing stories now that, you know, I don't know what university it was, is starting to discourage their students using it.
Yeah, it was an Ivy League university. I can't remember which one it was.
Yale or something like that. Yeah.
It actually has to do more with a technical bug with Apple's software. It's something when you renew the IP address. And that's what they're banning them for.
George Washington University in D.C. was one of the institutions. I forget what the other one was. But, yeah.
It's like Rutgers or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
Well, Israel's banned them completely.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with that.
Hmm. They're all blaming Wi-Fi. That's, I guess, wow. Everyone.
I did get the Wi-Fi version. I sat here patiently that Saturday afternoon and waited for my brown truck to arrive.
That was my favorite tweet of the day. I was watching you, you know, kind of complain about, you know, living out in the sticks a little bit and being the last one on the line. And then there was just the tweet that came across and just said brown truck. And I was like, okay, he's got his iPad.
That was the last anybody heard from me for hours.
No, we were trying to do a meetup later that day, but I think everybody spent three hours syncing their iPad.
I have used mine mostly at home, and I actually went traveling with it last week. And there were only a couple of occasions when I thought, well, it might be nice to have 3G reception, because most of the places where I was using it, I had Wi-Fi. And in that context, I found it highly utilitarian. It's just, I'm finding new ways of using it and new ways of accessing information that I have been accessing in other ways all along that are just continue to surprise me. And I'm spending much more time in the app store and finding new things to play with. And one of the things that I've been doing a lot of is finding websites that I go to and making homepage icons out of them. Hmm. So I'm filling up my home screens with icons for magazines that I read and websites that I visit and blogs that I follow regularly. And that's what I'm actually filling up the home screen with, along with a few of the apps that I've got. And I'm using it constantly.
And I think
it's like a disappointment that I have to go back to my MacBook in order, because when I do have to type things, I have to go back. If it's going to be more than two sentences, I got to go back to the regular keyboard. I have not adjusted yet to the soft keyboard.
Yeah, and I think that was the big thing that everybody was talking about before it came out. Well, what is it supposed to do? I think the thing is, everybody is going to find a different way of utilizing the device, even in the midst of the complaints. Oh, it's a closed system, and it has the limitations of the on-screen keyboard, et cetera, et cetera. I think people are going to find their place with this device if they want to, you know, spend a little time with it.
After I'd spent a little bit of time with it, it occurred to me that the criticism that so many people offered up after the announcement, that, ooh, it's just a big iPod Touch or a big iPhone. That was inaccurate. What it really is a MacBook without that big clunky part at the bottom that has the computer and all the guts in it. It is the computer without, you know, it's just the screen. And it works really well in that way. So
do you writers find that this is going to be a great, you know, thing for you to write whatever, you know, for papers or whatever you're doing? Could this replace your MacBook in a travel sense? If you had
it
to have
could it with the keyboard.
Cool.
With the external keyboard.
I really love, and I reinvigorated, you know, playing with it. And of course I have, I, you know, we all have an iDisk, and even with people who don't have a, you know, an iPad or something, I had to get some documents to my business partner quickly. So I preloaded them, and I did not travel to New York with my MacBook Pro. I decided that I might buy the MacBook. I mean, I might buy the iPad. And I loved the way, with my experience, what I played with, all the iWork apps, just loved the way it felt, and really made that would be the thing for me, I think.
Yeah.
So you guys find paid pages, or are you actually able to use the soft keyboard effectively?
In pages I did, you know, obviously, cause it's just mostly typing and formatting. I've yet to see anyone utilize the other apps very well, Keynote especially. Uh-huh. Have you guys messed with it?
I haven't gotten any of those apps. Go ahead, Liz.
I mean, the complaints I've been hearing about Keynote is that it doesn't handle video very well, but if you have fairly static presentations as far as mainly text and just images, that it will probably work just fine. I'm interested in seeing how that next generation of OS software, you know, with all the promise that it held, with that event a couple weeks ago, with the multitasking and the de facto folders and things like that, if it will help in that presentation moment as well. That's the thing that could tip it for me for my own use. For in the fall, I'd love to be able to get hold of one and use it, in a classroom situation as my presentation machine. That's the thing that I work with at Belmont. God love them. They're all Windows machines and they're a little bit clunky. And this would serve a lot of purposes for me in that environment. As far as a writing situation, I'm kind of intrigued. I've got a couple things that lined up for the summer that would benefit from having a completely portable machine like that. There are a lot of different things that I can think of that I would be interested in using it for. I just, I'm watching with interest everybody else's use cases thus far. And
yeah, are you a touch typist? I mean, can you?
I am.
Type pretty quickly.
And that's the thing. Thank God they forced me to take a typing class before I could take a computer class in high school.
Yeah, that was the one thing I learned in high school that I still use.
Exactly. and the couple times I have played around with the keyboard, I've been able to work my way around it. It's one of those things where the autocorrect will jump ahead of you if you're not careful. I think it's probably like learning to navigate on the iPhone keyboard. You'll just get you'll just get used to it over time. I even find myself on my actual keyboard occasionally hitting the space bar twice and expecting a period to show up. It just depends on what you etch into your physical memory that way.
Yeah.
Well, my personal experience.
I'm finding it mostly to be a media consumption machine. When we get to the discussion about Flash and the closed system, I really haven't had very many encounters where I've missed that. And it's like I'll spend an hour with it, checking in all my information sources in the morning, and then when it's time to start going the other way and producing instead of consuming, then I'm still going back to the regular keyboard.
Now, my personal experience, I downloaded Numbers and tried using it for certain things, and that's the only app that of the iWork apps that I have that I don't like. It's just not intuitive. Pages is relatively easy to use, and the only problem I have is getting the documents out. They've got to work. They've got to figure out a better way of syncing your documents with your desktop. If you've got Pages on your desktop, you need to be able to get it back and forth quite easily.
Yeah. And I'm sure they will do that within their internal approaches. And I'm sure, and hopefully they will allow third parties, like a Dropbox or box.net or whatever, to access that file system in a limited fashion and give a little bit more flexibility on that transfer back and forth of documents. It's just not practical for everybody to have to try to hardwire sync up every time they want to move, a Word document back and forth.
Well, speaking of allowing other companies into their ecosystem, really one big company that is taking the brunt of Apple's closed ecosystem is Adobe. Pretty much,
but only one aspect of Adobe.
Actually, two very big aspects. Their new development kit. Terms of use says Adobe Creative Suite 5 has a function in the Flash Flash Pro program where you can build something in Flash and export it out as an iPhone app that writes the code for you.
Mm-hmm.
Apple has a specific item in their use, their right, whatever you'd sign away when you become an Apple developer,
mm-hmm.
that says that you cannot they develop anything for the Apple products in a specific that creates an in-between layer. So you have to write the code that runs directly in your app instead of creating an in-between program that generates a program. They don't want a in-between step and the argument is that we've been there, done that, and it came out with horrible results.
I wish I could find now, I looked for it earlier, a blog post that I read somewhere comparing this dust up with the dust up years ago when the user, the graphical user interface on the Macintosh was first introduced, and developers still wanted to write for the command line. Did you see? Did anybody see this post? And the argument was that as long as people keep writing for the old platform, they're not going to adapt and to begin to develop new stuff for the new platform. So right. I think the argument that Apple is making here is stop writing in Flash. We're not going to support Flash, so stop writing in it and begin to use the tools that are forward-looking so that your thinking begins to change and you begin to think of the new possibilities of the new platform rather than devoting your time and energy to adapting the old platform to the new use. And I think there's an argument to be made for that. There's plenty of ways that you can, apparently, based on my experience with the iPad, there's lots of people who aren't having any trouble producing video content and visual content for this new platform without having to go back and do it in Flash.
Sure.
Well, here's the developer. It's a developer agreement. It's a 21,000 word agreement, and it's section 3.3.1 of the document. And it says, applications must be originally written in Objective-C, C, C++, or JavaScript as executed by the iPhone OS WebKit engine, and only code written in C, C++, and Objective-C may compile and directly link against the documented APIs. Pretty much, if you don't write the code yourself, you don't get in. You don't get on the iPhone or the iPad.
Or at least a compiler that works with those three languages. I mean, it seems...
I don't think that this is so much a prohibition against Flash as it is an encouragement for developers to use the tools that are compatible with the new platform. Now, that the consequence of that is that it excludes Flash, but it's let's look forward instead of looking back. It's not, oh, we don't like Flash, so we're not going to use it. It's this is a new platform. It has new tool sets that work within this platform. Use those tool sets.
Well, in some ways, it's kind of, you know, it's not an exact comparison, but, you know, if everyone had cassettes and the CD was coming out, you know, it gradually worked itself out. And in this way, it seems like there's a lot of people that still don't know too much about what the future is going to hold. And there's a small few of these people that see the future, which is not Flash. And they're clashing with a much more vocal bunch of people that seem to be just making it more of a dust up, as you say, than just something that needs to just kind of happen.
Yeah, I'm a convert at this point because I remember disclaiming when the iPad was first announced and they said it wasn't going to support Flash. I think I tweeted a couple of times, you know, what's up with that? How stupid is that? And now that I've got the thing, it's like, well, that was a big deal about nothing. It's like I'm not missing it at all. In fact, the only time today when I noticed that I was not getting Flash was when I was watching a video at the Wall Street Journal website. I'm watching a video of something, and there was alongside it an ad. And the ad was in Flash, and the ad didn't come through, and boy, did I not give a rip. I didn't miss that one at all.
I just wonder, though, as far as a development community for iPhone apps, for the iPhone OS to this point, you know, we're, what, 2.5, almost 3 years into that kind of community. You know, why now to exclude those tools from Adobe that, you know, that feed into that developer community? It seems a little at the same time, it seems, you know, they want to adhere to a certain quality standard on incoming apps for the iPad App Store as well as new iPhone apps. But also it seems a little bit petty because it is, you know, specifically carving out Adobe products in this development community and saying, no, you can't use them.
But is it, and here's where I'm way over my head in terms of the particulars of the technology. But
oh, I am as well.
I gather from the way the iPad and the iPhone work, that they are a much less industrial strength or a much lighter operating system than the full-fledged Mac OS in a MacBook or an iMac. And so it doesn't have the resources to run what I keep reading is something of a resource hog like Flash.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you're running a freight train on a two-lane highway when you've got Flash, when you're contemplating Flash on a small platform like the iPhone platform. So it's a kind of an incompatibility there of that particular tool set, the Flash set, in a much lighter platform. I mean, one of the cool things about the iPad compared to a regular computer is you press the button and it lights up and you've got everything you need instead of waiting for the thing to boot.
Yeah.
So that's a indicative of the lightness of the platform. And I think the reasoning here is that Flash is something that weighs heavily on that otherwise light platform. And right. Like I say, the fact that I'm able to get the content that Flash would otherwise provide in some other form augurs against the necessity of having Flash, if indeed the things that I read about Flash, about its bugginess, its resource drain qualities, are in fact true, which I honestly don't know because I'm not well enough versed in the details of the technology on that level.
Well, what's Adobe going to do? I mean, what's their other trick?
That's the same question as like asking, what was Microsoft going to do when we couldn't use DOS anymore?
Yeah.
You know, Adobe will move on to many other great things, I'm sure.
And there will be hundreds of millions of handsets and other tablet-based computers and Windows systems that will continue to use Flash. As much as we are Apple fanboys, I'm not really all that concerned about the health of Adobe because they're still going to have a blue ton of customers out there.
There you go.
Well, one thing, and we'll finish this up. Let me get the last word in. I kind of agree with Apple on one part about the no in-between layers, that if you're going to write code, you write code strictly for the app that you want to build that goes on the system instead of building it in another system and really converting it to work on the iPhone. And the reason why I said that is when you're using another tool like Flash, you know how Flash works. But let's say Apple updates the operating system and it breaks a bunch of things that Adobe had built into the conversion process. Now you've got to wait for Adobe to update their software before your apps you can fix your apps to work on the iPhone or the iPad. It's just a whole nother layer of complexity that I can see slowing down upgrade processes and bug fixes, because really you truly don't know what you're creating in the application if you're not writing the code yourself. And that's it. So
that makes
next
sense
topic.
To me. Whatever he just said makes sense to me.
I'll take two. I have what he's having.
Dang.
All right. So, Lucas.
Yes, sir.
Do you know who our web host is?
Let's see. I think it has something to do with a four-letter word and the numeral five.
You are correct. It is a four-numeral word with the number five, which is site5.com. They've been our host since 2006, and they've been happy to take our money. Did you know that?
Well, that's very kind of them.
And in such limited quantities.
Yes. Actually, 3 months at a time.
That's been the nice part of it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, their support is amazing. The cost, I mean, if you sign up, of course, with a host, if you sign up in advance and pay a longer term, you get a better price. Like, you can get it as low as $4.95 a month. And we've got an affiliate count, which means if you go to NashvilleTechFeed.com/site5, that'll take you right to Site 5, and you can check it out. And if you sign up, we get a little bit of credit and help us pay for this wonderful hosting. So if you want to support the Nashville Tech Feed, go check it out. Let me just go into one little thing about why I like them is I was setting up my Google Apps account this week, and I had a problem with my DNS. I emailed them literally not 10 minutes later. I had an email that said, oh, you had something wrong. I fixed it. It should be working in 90 minutes. 90 minutes later, everything was working, and I emailed them back, and I said, thanks, everything's great. And they instantly responded back, awesome, great, have a good weekend. And, I mean, it is a really good company that does amazing support. So if you're looking for them, check them out. NashvilleTechFeed.com/site5. Lucas, on to our next segment. How are how are you feeling? It's been a couple weeks since we recorded live.
You know, again, it's that whole pollen thing. It literally knocked me down for the count for about 2 weeks, and you know, so I'm still in a little bit of the cloud, if you will, trying to get everything, you know, back straightened out. But speaking of the cloud. And,
wow, segment master.
See, I was trying for the segue and I just telegraphed it way too much. But more news about the sky falling for our beloved, and that was in quotes, music industry, and how that the continued demise of a little round pieces of shiny plastic continues to dominate the news. Reuters stories talking about album sales declining once again in quarter one. But all the new twist on the story this time is that digital sales are also dipping a little bit as part of that overall music business demise story. So, guys, what are we learning off of this? You know, the future of music was supposed to be digital, and digital downloads and internet radio and all these other things that have been lined up and eventually knocked down as far as the quote unquote future of music.
What I would like to see is if there's any comparative stats that show that there's an increasing use of cloud-based services, mm-hmm. like Lala.com or Spotify, or are these global sales we're talking about, or just domestic sales?
This was a Billboard story, basically talking about combined U.S. sales of albums and track equivalent albums.
Yeah, okay.
Totaled 113.2 million units, down 6.1% from the 120.6 during the first quarter of 2009. Mm-hmm. So you know,
I'm just asking the question: are people listening to less music, or are they just buying less music?
Well, the only thing that we know is that they're buying less music. But
yep.
Again, another interesting stat to see is along the lines of what you're just saying, Paul, is that, you know, okay, maybe they're buying less music, but are they listening to more music? Are they engaging in other multimedia things that music are associated with, i.e. games, i.e. apps, i.e. right. concerts, you know, looking at, you know, to kind of get back to Lucas's question, what are we going to do, you know, what the future of the music industry, and you know, speaking as a musician who's never been part of the major scene, when I hear things like this, I just want to diversify more. And looking at another stat, I guess, to look at is how many of these, you know, established big artists who seem to be the ones that are hurting the most from this lack of sales, how many of them are experimenting with their own revenue streams, i.e., you know, 360 deals, which seem to be on the rise, I think. I could be wrong. I'm not good at authentic stats, but
no, they are on the rise. I was looking into that.
Which really, you know, think about it. I mean, if you have the ability to be connected to if you're a fan, you're connected to a band and you go to shows and you're paying to see a show and then you're engaged in the community and their Twitters and watching their videos, at some point you might not even have time to sit down and listen to their music anyways. I know we're all busy people, and you know, it's not like we're teenagers anymore where we could sit in our bedrooms and just listen to Dark Side of the Moon with the big headphones on.
I just did that tonight.
But that's a great way to do it, though.
It's the only way, you know. And at some point, I'm, you know, even in my youngness, growing older, I'm kind of forcing myself to, you know, not be as connected. But most people I see are staring down at their little handheld device, doing something, and I'm wondering if that is their replacement for music ways.
And that was the fascinating thing when I was walking around on Saturday, which was the annual record store day, you know, independent record stores holding events and having you know, limited release stuff in their individual stores. I went to both the Groove over in East Nashville and over to Grimey's, and walked around and thumbed through the stacks of easily available and inexpensive pieces of plastic and or vinyl, and yet a lot of people walking around also looking at their handheld devices, not necessarily listening to music through them, but you know, they were distracted, and I was one of them in the middle of all that.
Yeah, that's a subject for a whole other conversation. Is this whole cultural phenomenon of people staring at their handheld devices?
Yeah,
all day long. It's the observation is not really pertinent to this particular discussion about the decline in CD sales, but I notice it too. And there was a wonderful article that I meant to cite recently in the Nashville Scene about some women that all got together for dinner. They went out to a nice restaurant and they had a nice conversation. And the minute there was a lull in the conversation, the women all reached into their purses and pulled out their handheld devices and went somewhere else.
Yep. The iPhone effect.
Yeah, the iPhone effect.
It's a domino thing where the first person that brings their device out, then everybody feels like they've got dispensation to check theirs as well.
So I think the point is well taken that there's our attention is now being drawn to all this social networking stuff, whether it's email or doing Facebook on our device or Facebook on our laptops or Facebook on our iPads. There are all these other things now that are attracting, demanding our attention. We're running out of bandwidth here, folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Literally, and human bandwidth. I mean, our brains are, you know, at the end of the day, we've spent so much time communicating, quote unquote, that you're just ready to call it a day without, you know, running to your stereo to pop on a tune.
And maybe that's, you know, maybe we need to apply our human bandwidth in a different fashion when we are thinking about music consumption. I remember I thought this was a horrible idea in the moment, but when they were debuting the Dead Weather record at Third Man, at Jack White's place, about this time last year. Now, granted, it was an industry event, and they didn't want anybody to bootleg it or whatever. But they made you check your phone. They had a coat check and a phone check, and you could not, you know,
awesome.
You couldn't take your phone into where they were playing the record. You know what? That might not be a bad idea for clubs to do or whatever, small venues, albeit the insurance might kill them on that. But wouldn't that be great? You know,
it would come as such a shock to so many people.
I know.
Actually go 2 hours without having to look at a gizmo.
And I was the same way. But then I realized, oh my God, I'm paying more attention to the music than I'm here. And it wasn't even a live performance. They were just playing the record. And I was like, I'm here. I'm listening. I'm paying attention.
Yeah.
Once you get over that initial shock, then you can actually turn your attention to what you're there to experience.
I was amazed. I was up in New York, and it was just a gorgeous day. And I went down to Sheep Meadow, you know, that big, you know, field right there in Central Park.
Yeah.
And I sat down there, and I was just tired. I was going through, you know, I just had to sit down for a minute. I looked around, and nobody in that park, half of them didn't have any clothes on for crying out loud, no shirts or anything, but nobody was looking at their phone. And I was like, I can't kill this moment, you know? So I literally like switched my iPhone off, put it in my bag. I'm like, this is great. You know? So it's doable. Yeah. And actually, since I've been back from New York, I've had this sort of kind of reinvigoration to switch off from time to time. More than I ever would. I know it's hard because a lot of us were in technology or we're kind of, it kind of pays our bills, so to speak.
Right.
But there is this balance that might, the time away might be, you know, the fondness grows,
the heart grows fonder.
Yeah. It's something I don't know.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Yes.
However, on the flip side of going to a club and checking your phone and stuff, wouldn't it be great to coordinate it to where everyone is using their device for the same thing? You know, maybe participating, you know, going to a show like, you know, I do streaming shows where, you know, I'm the one controlling the stream and people come and it's my camera and they're watching. Wouldn't it be cool if it's, you know, 500 cameras and it's like the new bootleg in some way? It's like, if Grateful Dead, you know, if iPhones are around at the peak of the beginnings of the Grateful Dead bootlegging kind of phenomenon, imagine the kind of video things that would crop up. And if everyone collaborated together, I don't know if this is even, you know, just crazy thinking, but, you know, the complete opposite of just, if everyone's going to be there with their device, let's get them all to use it somehow together.
Yeah. I think there's spaces for that kind of moment, but there's also, you know, at the same time, we are conditioning ourselves to want to capture those moments and experience them. I mean, I've live tweeted shows and I've, you know, taken photos, but there's, if you're a music fan, you also need to take that step back every once in a while and just enjoy the experience that you're trying to have rather than trying to translate it into 140 characters.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the experience that I had. I think last week, I don't remember the specifics, oddly, but I remember being in, it was like one of those beautiful spring days, and I get my gizmo out and I start Facebooking or tweeting what a beautiful day it was, and I realize that I'm not actually experiencing the beautiful day anymore.
Right.
I've taken myself out of that experience in order to somehow have my own presence of it in a different, entirely different universe. And I wonder if there's something kind of going, some psychological thing going on here where we actually feel so disconnected from our immediate environment that we feel like we have to tell the world where we are and constantly make contact with our tribe, so to speak, in order to validate our existence.
Sure.
It's the modern equivalent of I don't really exist unless I'm on television.
It's true. And, you know, at the same time, we have all worked so hard to kind of create our social networks that way. We feel like we have this obligation to continue to feed them. But sometimes we just need to stop. We may be overfeeding them. You know, yeah. What's funny, you know, the Foursquare badge that, or overshare. Some people I know are very proud of that. Others are like, oh, wow, it's just a reminder that I have been talking way too much.
Yeah, I think the Foursquare thing is kind of where I've drawn the line. I started to use it. I thought it would be kind of interesting to be able to find folks when I was out and looking around. But then somebody else was on Foursquare, and I had it on my iPhone, and every 15, 20 minutes, this thing would buzz at me and tell me that this friend of mine was at Whole Foods and now she's at some restaurant. So we're also like, I didn't really need to know that on such a constant basis.
Can I take a guess who it was?
And I don't really care who the mayor of Fido is.
So, there was a great tweet today. I can't remember who I think it was somebody was retweeting it. They were saying, somebody was asking, what's the purpose of Foursquare? And the other person was responding, well, to alienate your Twitter feeds, help you winnow down your follower count, something like that. So, yeah.
I think this has answered our question. This is why we're not buying music. We're just tweeting.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
I agree.
Yeah,
I think that is the answer.
The answer is
part
we're doing
of the
too
answer,
many other
certainly.
Things.
Yeah.
You well, know. And also I think we're in the growing pains of finding the new CD or the new format. Besides the MP3, you know, okay, we still have digital as kind of the stronger, but, you know, because there's so many different lalas and I likes and all these different things, mm-hmm. like, you know, at some point you just want to have one or two that you really like using. And there's just so many that it's the landscape of different ways to consume music is uncountable, it seems.
Yeah. And you don't have that consistency of experience throughout. I mean, when you had CDs and cassettes before that and vinyl before that, you pretty much put it in the player and you knew what kind of experience you were going to get. This way, okay, this, you know, Rhapsody does it one way and Lala kind of does it another, and it cues versus playlists versus whatever. And
yeah.
It's just not a consistent, and it's never going to be, but it's not a consistent experience throughout.
Yeah, but there are more, what's happening now is that there are more options coming up
for
ways of obtaining music online.
Yeah,
I would kind of, you know, I mean, I wish there was more statistical evidence in the background of this one item that we're talking about where the digital sales have dropped by 1%. I mean, it would be nice to know how that attention is being rediverted. My assumption is that we are beginning to see the statistical account for the replacement of ownership by access. That the imperative to own music, we have seen it peak, and we have seen a substitute now also peak, And I wish there was some statistical evidence that would back up that assertion. We don't have that now.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to see more of that in the months and years ahead, where people are going, well, wait a second, I don't need to own music if I have access to whatever I want on demand. I think we are further into the threshold of that event.
But that's going to count on those services being able to survive. Rhapsody's been around for almost a decade now, and you know, it has not been able to gain a critical mass of users. I can't remember what I read a story last week talking about how development or innovation on La La has pretty much come to a halt because of Apple's.
We just don't know what's going on behind the scenes.
Well,
Apple controls it now, and Apple doesn't talk about what they're developing until they're ready to announce it.
I will bet
a dollar right now that sometime during the summer, like around the time that the OS 4 is released for the iPad, that there is going to be an announcement that the content has moved into the cloud, and that iTunes is now capable of storing your music in the cloud and delivering it to your now multitask-capable iPad. I am betting that that's going to happen, and that all that development is going on behind the scenes between Apple's iTunes team and the newly acquired La La team, and all that stuff's going to merge, and we're going to see a huge shift in the way music is consumed, I think, by the summer or early fall.
You know what? I will take that bet because I think the exact opposite is happening. I think they did what we expected them to do, or had at least mentioned that might be a possibility, is that they've taken La La and they're putting it on the shelf. They're going to lock it down. Especially because the reason I think of this again, their chosen partner for data, you know, 3G data on the iPad is still AT&T, a service that has not improved necessarily their data infrastructure. And so to think that they are going to encourage iPad and iPhone users in the 4.0 world to consume most of their music via external data services, I think it's just unrealistic right now.
Well, I can see where you would jump to that kind of a conclusion.
It's a bit of a leap, I know.
Given Apple and Steve Jobs' propensity for ignoring advances in technology and being way behind those curves, I mean, that's typically what you would expect of Apple. So I would be not at all surprised if, as you say, they put this on the shelf because it has no future and they don't want to have any hand in bringing that future to bear.
Yeah.
Well, here's an article
if it doesn't, then I will buy you your web album of choice there, Paul.
Okie dokie. Yes, and it will cost that buck.
It will cost that buck, exactly.
Well, here's an interesting article from ZD.net. Has Apple killed off indie music service LaLa.com?
I think that's the one I was referencing from last week.
Yeah, he said that they've killed off the iPhone app. Support has turned sluggish. They're not doing new code for it anymore, something like that. I mean, it seems like I'm hoping it's wrong, but I'm thinking that's what happened.
It could be that the support has trickled to a stop and they're not doing new code because they're turning it into the iTunes store in the clouds, or it could be they're just putting it away. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm hoping it's the former. I'm thinking it's the latter.
Yeah. And okay. Like I say, because we all know of Apple's long history of acquiring new technologies and then putting them on the shelf, which is why we wind up with these crippled devices like iPads and iPhones.
That we love so much.
Yeah.
Well, and if they're pushing.
I'm being a little facetious here, but apparently not very effectively.
Well, think of all the HD content that Apple is just really trying to push. I mean, you're going to need a cloud. You're going to need a Cumulonimbus cloud to not only stream your music and all that kind of stuff, which is kind of could be easy if push comes to shove. But of all the other great, wonderful things that the iTunes Store has become, which is a movie store and a TV show depot, streaming all that stuff. I mean, keeping it is a hassle, obviously, yes, but man. Streaming a 5
gigabyte. There's another discussion here the thing that you were alluding to, Lucas, about the bandwidth and the reliance on AT&T. Mm-hmm. And someday we should do some research on the FCC's initiative to bring a broader, a wider, faster broadband service to the nation, and the arguments that are now beginning to develop around that. You know, it's yet another socialist conspiracy to concentrate all of this activity in the government. And of course, the Republicans are opposed to it, and they want to kill net neutrality. And
right.
This is, you know, I have the articles sitting on my reading stand downstairs, but I haven't read them yet. And I think it's a very germane point to this discussion about cloud storage and access to content as opposed to actual ownership of it. We will need a lot more bandwidth than we have now. And there are initiatives afoot to provide that bandwidth. How long it will take is anybody's guess.
Which is, I mean, it's funny because here we are, the nation that is the world's single biggest content production studio, essentially. And we're what, 15th, 20th in the world as far as total broadband access 30. Per capita?
Yeah.
So, and again, it's something that's not necessarily going to happen anytime soon if it's going to cut into the profit margins of the giant telecoms. So, yeah.
Well, you know, there's another discussion that I've been reading lately about the telecoms starting to move into pay-as-you-go for data access.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's going to be a component of the 4G iPhone.
Could be.
That you know, you're going to be on a different kind of – it's not going to be all you can download and upload.
Ooh.
But it's going to be based on how you actually use it. That's
speaking
entirely
of internet
possible.
Speaking of internet connectivity, why don't we go into what Jeff has got coming up? Sorry to cut you guys off. But
it's okay. Oh, yeah. We need to roll along here.
Yeah. We need to keep it rolling. Rolling.
My little Skype party that I'm doing.
Yeah, you got a couple of things going on, and this actually kind of plugs right into what we were just discussing. Why don't you fill us in, Jeff?
Yeah, real quick. I play piano at the Big Bang Piano Bar, and we got one in Nashville, and we got, you know, in Columbus, St. Louis, and Tempe, Arizona. And I'm also on the board of advisors of songsoflove.org, which is a great charity that, you know, creates songs for children who are in the hospital or, you know, critically, terminally ill. And we're going to do a big fundraiser, you know, and obviously you having people come to the bar and donate and do big, you know, press releases and things like that. But the goal is to connect all four bars, you know, for all over the country via Skype in a big Skyposaurus type of way. And we're working on all of that big screen thing. So if I learn any tricks for you, Dave, I'll pass it along.
Thank you.
But and I've been talking to, you know, Peter Himmelman's peeps and might have some TriCaster help. So I'm kind of cheating a little bit. But the goal is to on June 24th, Songs of Love is going to have a song written for them by all the audience members on all four bars. Well, not necessarily written, but they're all going to be singing live. So I'm very excited to see how this works out. Obviously, we're dependent upon bars bandwidth. Last time I did a big Skype show at the bar, I had to actually call AT&T and have them up it for one day, which is a big hassle. So, but that's coming along, and actually you can go to thebigbangbar.com and learn about our initiative, sort of technically, but also more what we're doing just to raise awareness for this, this event. And also I'm playing a show at a very cool connected, internet, cafe/ music venue called Edge Hill Cafe, Wednesday, April 21st, and doing a show. And I'm encouraging people to show up, and they can pull out their handheld devices if they want, and take pictures or video and quick it, or you know, I may be you streaming it myself. Obviously, there's advantages of being somewhere live, but it's going to be fun. I'm opening up for a guy named John Leffler, who's lead guitar player for Dashboard Confessional, they're opening for Bon Jovi that night, so he's like doing his show for Jovi and then running over to do the show with me. So it's going to be fun. Cool. Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, Edge Hill Cafe, and you could go
this
to jeffsmith.com and learn more.
That's
about
Jeff with a G.
That is Jeff with a G. Yeah,
G E O F F.
It's a neat little place. You know, it's. I think it's. I'm really glad that it's starting to grow and really do a lot more musically. I've played there many times before, and you know, part of playing in a coffee shop is you get people, as you say, typing and doing their thing. But the more and more I go back there, I think more and more are going there in the evenings for the music, which is really cool.
Well, you know, the earlier Nashville Tech Feed, well, before it was called the Tech Feed, the Nashville Feed podcasts, our live shows were done at Edge Hill Studios Cafe.
Yeah, it's a great place. I think it's that's all I got to say.
Spent many an hour there, mainly because they actually bother to have power that you can plug in and have your laptop going.
Unlike Fido.
Yeah, I wasn't going to name any names, but sure. Yeah, unlike Fido.
All right, final segment, guys. Okay. What we're consuming. Let's start with Lucas.
Well, again, coming out of my record store day experience, and again, it was a fantastic day. You know, wonderful outside, and there was music, you know, all over town. Basically, I saw a couple of different things. Obviously, at Grimey's, and then ran over to the Earth Day Festival over at Centennial Park and saw Bela Fleck and an amazingly quickly cobbled together band. So it was a fantastic music day.
How about that combination of banjo and trombone?
Oh my God, it was great.
Wasn't that great?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
They got one song in when they brought everybody out, and Bela was like, well, let's see. I knew I liked drums. I knew I liked fiddle. I had no idea I liked trombone.
Yeah.
So it was really, really cool. But yeah, basically, as far as what I'm consuming is I found just in wandering through the stacks again over at Groove, a two disc Cheap Trick set that I didn't have. I realized I didn't have any Cheap Trick on my iPod, and rather than actually it would have been cheaper than trying to download it from iTunes. So yeah, for a little under $6, I've got about 2.5 hours worth of Cheap Trick music I've been listening to the last couple days.
Excellent. Paul, what are you consuming?
Well, I'm still reading Passionate Minds, the co-biography of the French poet Voltaire and his mistress Emily du Châtelet, a little bit of 18th century drama there. And the new season of The Tudors, the final season, has started up, so there's a little bit of 16th century drama. Love me that historical stuff. I am just consuming all kinds of stuff that I am now moving to my iPad. Just an example of this one screen I'm looking at. The Nation, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, All Things D from the Journal, The Week, Vanity Fair, The Atlantic, all this stuff I'm now picking up through my iPad.
You're just a consuming fiend.
Say again?
You're just a consuming fiend.
Well, I'm afraid that this iPad thing, it has turned my attention deficit disorder up by a full order of magnitude.
I didn't think I could go any higher.
And my new favorite blog is something called Daring Fireball.
I like that. I read him too.
Yeah, he's that John Gruber, I guess, is the principal there, and he seems to really have his fingers in the middle of everything.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking at 21st century drama there with what Daring Fireball does.
With Daring Fireball, which of course is done, you know, in an entirely different way. So, yes, 21st century drama to balance all my 17th and 16th century dramas.
Jeff, what are you consuming?
Way too much. Actually, I had Indian food tonight, so it was good.
That's what that smell was.
No, yes, and I cooked steak the night before, so I'm way too full, but I keep consuming. I listened to No Agenda with Adam Curry and John Dvorak, partly because I'm, you know, a content provider for the show, but also it's a good fun laugh and deconstructing news, conspiracy theories and stuff like that. And
are you on No Agenda at all? Have you been on it?
I'm on it way too many times, mostly because I have about 20 or 30 jingles that they play. So
okay,
and I'm in a way I'm on it way too much. As a book, I just finished reading The Hobbit again. I just felt like picking it up. It's such an easy read. And it was toying between that or The Silmarillion by Tolkien. And I realized that I didn't have the time to read The Silmarillion again. So I picked up The Hobbit, and that was fun. And now I'm just like, oh, man, I'm reading more Tolkien again, unfortunately.
Did you see that Peter Jackson has turned in his two screenplays?
I saw. For The Hobbit. Yes, they're still. I do not think they've officially announced too much of the details of cast. Last time I checked was a couple weeks ago, though, so I don't know what I'm missing.
Right,
the gentleman that played Gandalf is back. That's I know for sure.
Yeah, they just haven't announced.
Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen is. Yeah. There's no Bilbo announcement yet, I don't think.
They should just use the guy from the first movies.
Yeah, but I think the rumor was they could even go to David Tennant, former Doctor Who guy, which leads me into my other consumption. Season 5, Doctor Who, the new actor, Matt Smith, it dropped a few weeks ago in England, and now it was live last weekend on BBC America in the States. And, of course, iTunes, you can get it in HD, because, unfortunately, Comcast Nashville still does not have BBC America HD.
So, neither does DirecTV.
Ah, well, they will soon. Apparently, Comcast has now got this new thing where they're going door to door for whatever reason. And the guy came and told me that BBC America HD should be here by this midsummer.
Hey, they got the Comedy Channel finally in HD. Jon Stewart is much slimmer in HD than he was on expanded standard def.
Well, I'm sidetracking. I'll finish, but I just told the guy. I said, "Man, I don't even watch anything non HD because the quality of the SD channels looks too much like YouTube now."
Yeah,
they compressed the hell out of them.
You're watching YouTube on a 52-inch screen. I'd rather just.
So, I wonder if he could have taken your census data at the same time while he was doing that as well. You think they? Well, I mean, yeah, the United States Census brought to you by Comcast. I think that would be a good partnership.
Well, here's what I'm consuming: audiobook. It's called Rework by Jason Fried and David Hannison. Those are the guys that founded 37 Signals, that do Basecamp, which is project management for software, and HiRISE, which is contact management. It's a very interesting book on how they pretty much tell you throw away what you've learned about work and, I guess, rework. So it's a very short read. Audiobook is only about 2.5 hours, but it kind of sits every time they say things and your first thought comes out of mind is like, well, that goes against everything that I've been taught, which I kind of like those. It kind of makes you think a little bit different than what you're used to.
Well, perhaps I will purchase that for my Kindle and then read it on my iPad.
Nice.
Anybody want to buy a Kindle?
No. I just remember seeing my first ever Kindle ad on April 3rd.
Uh-huh.
And went and going, really? Yeah. A little too late, guys. Sorry. Should have thought about this about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Well, here's what I say.
Computer says, nah.
But other things I'm consuming is I finally got into the Bugle, Lucas.
Oh, there you go.
The Bugle podcast.
What do you think?
It's pretty freaking funny once you understand English humor.
Exactly. Yes, you have to be sensitized to it after a while. But it's my most favorite podcast to listen to. Jeff, have you experienced the Bugle?
Slightly. Of course, I love it. I mean, I've heard it once or twice, and just it's something that I would totally dig because I'm about as Anglophile as you can get.
There you go.
Well, if it appeals to Anglophiles, I'll just have to look it up on my iPad as we speak.
There you go.
It's an Apple commercial.
Podcast, yes.
Without
there
the great
you go.
Music.
Yeah, this whole thing is an Apple commercial. God, did they just, a mere 2.5 years ago, I was still steeped in the PC world, and now I'm completely out of it and just completely drunk on the Kool-Aid.
As well, most of us are.
Yep.
We are.
Oh, yes, there it is.
Well, I hate to run. I mean, I know we're wrapping up and stuff. I've actually got to get my daughter to bed. But
well, Jeff, tell us how we can find you, and then you can scoot.
First of all, guys, it's been a joy and an awesome time rapping with you guys. And
good to talk to you as well.
Do it again live. We should all go have a Pilsner somewhere sometime.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Or ale or whatever. You can find me at thejeffsmith.com, thegeoffsmith.com. You can buy my silly little ringtones at ringtonefeeder.com. Go to the Big Bang Bar sometime in Nashville and listen to me play Journey Don't Stop Believin' 1,200 times. Or,
at the behest of Dave's significant other, I think more than once.
Yes. And I have a new album that I just finished. It is coming out. I'm just waiting for my friend to finish a really awesome album cover. It's one of these things that's going to make me want to actually make a you know, a vinyl record just because he's an awesome artist. So more on my album That's Gravity soon. I will be premiering some of those tunes Wednesday night, Edge Hill Cafe, April 21st, if you guys want to come.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you joining us again. And as always, keep making the great music, and we'll be waiting for our intro song.
I'm back in town now. I'm done. You know, when I saw you at the Apple line, I said, okay.
I know. I'm just giving you a hard time. We played you last week, or the last episode. You were here in
musical spirit.
And now he's going to want royalties.
Okay.
But,
Well, thanks, Jeff.
I'm sorry I got to scoot, guys, but Paul, Lucas, Dave, it's been great.
Nice talking to you, Jeff. Yep.
Thanks. Lucas.
Yes.
How can we find you?
Nope. That's interesting.
That's okay.
Yeah, I am in all the old familiar places, still at largelandmammal.com, which actually works now. I found the setting on the inner workings of Blogger that allow people to just type in largelandmammal.com as opposed to www.largelandmammal.com.
Finally.
And still, when they can afford me, contributing to the Tennessean and to TuneInMusicCity.com, I will be appearing on that service a couple times this week. I have a story that will run tomorrow about Southern gospel superstar Jason Crabb, leading into Wednesday night. I regret that I will not be at Edge Hill Cafe for Jeff's show, because I will be backstage at the Grand Ole Opry House covering the 41st annual GMA Dove Awards. So, you know, pray to whatever God will listen that I make it out of there after with my sanity intact. So yeah, TuneInMusicCity.com, Tennessean.com.
Good luck with that.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to need it.
Yeah.
Or at least beverages afterwards. So, and you can also find me at TuneInLucas on Twitter.
Excellent, Lucas. Thank you. Paul.
Well, I'm still developing the blog at cohesionarts.com, where you can find links to the CD that I've been working with an emerging artist named Roseanne Drucker. She has assembled a just outstanding 7-track EP of beautifully produced and written and produced Americana-style songs. I'm constantly astonished at the quality of the music this woman has put together, and I am privileged to be part of the process of trying to release it. So we're starting with a virtual EP that you can find online at Roseanne, that's Roseanne Drucker.com. She's got a real interest in history and musical pedigree, and she's put together a great record. And anybody who's listening, I'd encourage you to stop by that website and just listen to the whole record. It's there in its entirety. And you can listen to that and find me on Twitter, as usual, at Driver49.
Excellent. And I'm David Baranja, and you can find me on Twitter at MDave. You can also find me at NashvilleTechFeed.com, where all show notes and other stuff that we're probably going to forget to put in there, you can find or can't find. We are also part of the Tech Podcasts network, which is, if you go to techpodcast.com/Nashville Tech Feed, you can get our feed there and leave comments and all sorts of good stuff. So I fulfilled that obligation again. And Lucas, again, how are we going to end the show?
I never know. I'm always surprised. So yeah, lay it on me.
You know what? I got nothing this week.
Well, see that, and now Jeff has left, so we don't have a weird noise in which to, end the thing. So, we could do a la the bugle, and just say bye,
bye,
bye.